Dr. George Dimitri, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Hello and welcome to Five Things. I'm James Brown. It's Sunday, February 5th, 2023. Every week we take a concept or idea and go deep. And this week we talk about football. Football coaches, that is. There are just 32 NFL head coaching jobs. 6 or 7 become vacant every year. And it seems like football fans and the media have the same conversation every year. Where are all the black head coaches? That's what we'll be discussing today. There were 5 black NFL head coaches at the end of the 2022 season. Mike Tomlin, Mike McDaniel, Todd Bowles, Lovie Smith, and interim head coach Steve Wilks. Wilks was not retained and Smith was fired. The Houston Texans replaced Smith with another black coach, D'Amico Ryans.
Anytime you have to implement a rule to interview a black head coaching candidate or minority head coaching candidate, that's, you know, admitting there's a problem.
That's USA Today sports reporter Tyler Dragon. He's been writing about the NFL for close to a decade. A recent USA Today sports analysis found that in the last 20 years, about 4 white coaches were hired for every coach of color. This in a league where 7 out of 10 players are minorities, and most of them black.
The NFL has historically had a problem with hiring black head coaches and all minority coaches for that matter, whether that be head coach, assistant coach, coordinators, and you can even go in the front office, GM, assistant GM, president player personnel. I can go down and down the line. There's no majority black owner in the NFL. And so, you know, when I look at the NFL landscape from top to bottom, they are really behind when it comes to diversity and inclusion.
20 years ago, the NFL adopted a policy known as the Rooney Rule. The rule was named after Dan Rooney, then owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers. It attempted to address the historically low number of minorities in head coaching positions. The first version of the policy required every team with a head coaching vacancy to interview at least one minority during their process.
We should be able to have a system where the best person for the job gets hired, not the person you know the best.
That's Doug Whaley. He had a long career in the NFL, working his way up through the Pittsburgh Steelers organization and eventually becoming the only black general manager in the 60-year history of the Buffalo Bills.
The league in general is very tough because it's not like a lot of other industries where there's a criteria of how you get promoted. It's a lot of it is right place at the right time. A lot of it's knowing the right people. A lot of it is just hard work and accomplishments. So the league in general is tough, but it is awful, a lot tougher for people of color and minorities and women.
Whaley says women and minorities struggle to break through in this insular world.
There is an old boys network, and there's a network where you're going to really protect and promote your own. Is it right, wrong, or indifferent? It is what it is, and that's the system, but that doesn't mean that it should keep perpetuating that system.
The Rooney Rule is 20 years old this year. Do you remember what your initial thoughts were when you heard that this kind of thing was being implemented?
Well, the first thing you say is kudos to Mr. Rooney, obviously the driving force behind it, and I work for him, so I'm biased, but also the league for identifying a problem and trying to come up with a solution. So it was a positive thing. But as we see now, just like anything, if people that have children, and even to yourself, when someone says you have to do something, you're obviously automatically going to have a bias towards it. So I think that we're starting to see that response from a lot of ownerships and a lot of hiring practices. If you have to do something, then it's not, you're not going to be fully invested in it as something that you chose to do.
Yeah, if I bought something for $1 billion, which is the minimum going price these days, I'd want to be able to hire who I want to hire. Right. Is what I'm thinking is going through these owners.
Well, I'll break it down to even more simpler terms. No matter what you make, if I came in here and told you how to spend your money, what would you say?
It'd be a tough conversation.
Exactly. And then I say, okay, well, I'm not going to tell you how to spend your money, but I'm going to tell you before you spend your money, you have to go through this process. You're going to be like, all right, let me just check that box and go through this process. But I'm still going to do what I want to do.
That's exactly what Tyler Dragon says happened.
Owners and, you know, front office people who are in charge of hiring, they found, you know, loopholes in the rule.
The league is being sued by Brian Flores, former Miami Dolphins head coach. He's accusing teams, including the New York Giants and Denver Broncos, of conducting sham interviews with him last year. The league and the teams deny his claims, but Dragon isn't convinced.
You can just interview a black or minority head coach and know that you're not really going to hire them. You're just making sure you cross all your T's and dot your I's before you make that hire of the white coach you want.
There's also disparities in the type of coaching roles black coaches are hired for.
One person called this like positional segregation.
That's USA Today's Tom Shad. He's part of the NFL Coaches Project, USA Today's ongoing series analyzing the demographics of football coaches.
Overall, of the on-field coaches in the NFL, it's something like 43% are coaches of color. But then when you look down at specific positions, running backs, you know, coach is a great example that ended up being kind of the crux of the story. 93% of running backs coaches in the NFL at the start of the season were coaches of color, compared to something like 18% or something of quarterbacks coaches.
As the league becomes more driven by quarterbacks, coaching quarterbacks is becoming a fast track to becoming a head coach. Only one head coach in the last 7 years, Anthony Lynn, who is black, went from running backs coach directly to head coach. He coached the Los Angeles Chargers. Shad says this goes back a while.
We did a lot of reporting on this in the fall, and you had some people who basically suspected that a lot of it stems from playing positions.
He says that argument is flimsy at best.
The thinking basically went, there are lots of black men who played running back. So when they transition to coaching, that's the position they know. It's kind of the easiest way to get into the business. But then we also looked at quarterbacks coaches, and there are lots of white quarterbacks coaches who never played quarterback. And so it starts to break down in kind of ways like that where, you know, I think that's kind of, that might be part of the answer to why it exists, but I certainly don't think it's the entire answer. I think a lot of it is kind of the underpinning of a lot of the reporting that we've done, which is just unconscious bias.
Shad interviewed Herm Edwards. He played in the NFL in the 70s and 80s. Eventually, he became head coach of the New York Jets and Kansas City Chiefs in the 2000s.
He was never coached by a man of color at any point in his career. And he said there was always on the teams, you know, that he was a part of, the coaching staff, there was always one coach of color, and it was almost always the running backs coach.
So what's happening here? And what goes into hiring a head coach? Andrew Brandt would know.
I think there's some basic qualities you look for.
Brandt is a sports agent turned NFL executive who spent about 10 years with the Green Bay Packers. In that time, they hired two head coaches. These days, he runs a sports law program at Villanova University and hosts the Business of Sports podcast.
A lot of our interview time was spent, what do you think of this player? What do you think of that player? How would you use that player? What's your familiarity? And what's your schemes? What's your systems? Also, what's your assistant coach setup? It's very rare for a coach interview to come in and say, yeah, I'll figure that out later. They have who they want to be their coordinators, to be their assistant coaches, in some cases to be their quality control coaches, to be their equipment managers, to be their strength and conditioning staff. What's the setup of their operation? Were they invited to lead your team?
He also wants to get a sense of their mentality.
I mean, I always used to ask questions like this, you know, what do you do when you get up in the morning? And he looked at me crazy. I said, well, you know, go to the bathroom. I said, what do you do before you go to the bathroom? You know, brush my teeth. What do you do? And then what I was looking for is the kind of person that, I don't know, does 50 push-ups right out of bed, that makes a to-do list right out of bed, that has a routine, because I've learned that the best indicators of future success are self-motivation and self-discipline. And if they could bring that character into our building, others would pick up on that, those same qualities, which again, through experience, I've learned those are the key indicators for success.
So personality plays a big role.
Personality is always going to play a big role. Can this person lead, 20 coaches, 60, 70 players, depending on practice squad? Can they lead? And leadership is defined in a lot of different ways. I mean, I think leadership's basic premise is, can you get people to do things that they necessarily don't want to do just because of you?
Relationships play a big part too. That's something Doug Whaley, the former NFL GM we met earlier, learned in his career.
I had access to the decision maker, and the decision maker saw how I worked, how I thought, how I interacted with people, and how I led. So it was, that's why I didn't have to do the interview. It was when the GM above me, and I was the assistant GM, he decided to retire, that decision maker was there in meetings with me, was there socially, professionally, and he understood that I could do the job.
Whaley is part of a group that launched One Global Culture Events, which helped minority candidates in pro sports connect with upper management.
Having them sit with, in non-interview settings, with the decision makers, presidents and owners, everything I've talked about, if you look at solutions instead of just focusing on the problem, that's where I think we all should be focusing our energy, not only minorities, but people that are the decision makers, if they truly want to change the system. Or if not, then we realize that they're just giving that lip service.
Tyler Dragon, sports reporter for USA Today, says the league already has similar programs in place.
But it still remains to be seen if that is going to lead to results.
Andrew Brandt agrees that the league has a long way to go. It suggested similar programs to the one Whaley describes, but warned that the issue is complex and without easy answers.
Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious point is that people tend to hire people like themselves. And that's not just true in the NFL. That's not just true in sports. It's true in business. It's true in life. And diversity only comes with some steps to increase representation. And NFL is doing that. Maybe they're not doing it as well as others, but I think sometimes they get faulted unfairly for things.
He says that there's been some improvement with diversity in the coaching ranks.
We see coaches, as I mentioned, like Ron Rivera, Mike McDaniel, Robert Saleh, not exclusively African-American. So you can look at different ways to judge minorities. And the other part of it is, I think from my view, there are more women in front offices now as well. And although a very small minority, more women in the coaching. And that is something that never seems to get noticed when we talk about the Rooney Rule.
He says that change is even happening in his sports business classes.
When I started teaching 7-8 years ago, I'd have a class of 50 students. It'd be 47 guys and 3 girls. I'm proud to report today my classes are basically 50-50. So, you know, women being interested in this area of business or law, from my viewpoint, has really grown.
A more diverse pipeline could help down the road. Doug Whaley says this could too.
I'll give you a quote from Bill Nunn, Hall of Fame scout from the Pittsburgh Steelers, the head personnel man for the 1974 draft that drafted 4 Hall of Famers. It's the gold standard of anybody in the personnel business. And his saying was, it's great to have a mentor, but it's even better to be a mentor. So all minorities, look for a mentor, but pay it forward by being a mentor.
If you like the show, write a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening and do me a favor, share it with a friend. What do you think of the show? Email me at jabrown@usatoday.com or leave me a message at 585-484-0339. we might have you on the show. Thanks to Tyler Dragon, Tom Shad, Doug Whaley, and Andrew Brandt for joining me. And to Alexis Gustin and Shannon Ray Green for their production assistance. For all of us at USA Today, thanks for listening. I'm James Brown, and as always, be well.
Dr. George Dimitri, medical oncologist, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works, and then the expert clinicians that interact with patients and families every day. It's not easy to have input at a substantive level to new drugs that are safe and effective at treating cancer. So our whole mantra has always been to try to minimize risks to patients and yet try to maximize the opportunity of finding how effective a new treatment could be. And that means understanding cancer really, really deeply.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at DanaFarber.org/everywhere.